Welcome to Break Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer. It's the 91st episode, and I'm here after the Australian Grand Prix. What a surprise Melbourne turned out to be with a non-Max Verstappen win. But before we get to today's episode, first a quick reminder to check out the link tree in the description. It has links to all the platforms where you can find this podcast and the ways you can contact me. Now, let's break down the race around Albert Park. Well, another podcast, another dominant Red Bull victory. Psych! Forza Ferrari, baby. That was so cheesy. But anyway, Carlos Sainz wins the race before the Japanese Grand Prix for the second year in a row. Oddly enough, Russell also crashing on the last lap in both of those races as well. Strange parallels, I would say. Could be an even stranger parallel if Carlos Sainz, an unemployed driver, similar to Checo 2020, ends up at Red Bull the next year. Just throwing it out there. Anyway, Sainz still with bandages on his abdomen from the appendix surgery that caused him to miss the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, gets it done. He was on it Saturday and especially on Sunday, the first actual Sunday race we got. Although for Canadians, it still kind of feels like a Saturday, like a super late Saturday night, not so much a Sunday morning. But anyway, it actually was a Sunday in Australia, at least. But yeah, Sainz just, he was brilliant, better than Leclerc, when it mattered for sure. I would say Leclerc was rapid in practice. Sainz probably just getting up to speed, especially on Friday, having missed the last race and still, walking gingerly around the paddock. Like, he was not 100%. So to put this, performance in was astounding. A lot of jokes this weekend about drivers should be removing the weight of the appendix, so you go faster. And you know, weight actually does matter. So for those wondering, an appendix weighs between 1 and 18 grams according to Google. 18 grams, just for the sake of it, is 0.03 pounds, so it's not really making much of a difference if you were actually wondering. Appendixes are not very large. But yeah, we get to quali on Saturday, and Sainz was just able to put it together, is kind of the way I would phrase it. Leclerc was quicker at times throughout the qualifying sessions. However, Sainz did not make a mistake on the last lap and did sort of through Q2 and Q3 look like the bigger challenge to Verstappen. I think I've said however the past few segues I want to make here. But yeah, it was just a front row start for Sainz. Verstappen was brilliant. We'll get to him later. But that front row start on race day, Sainz did not get the lead out of turn one, but he was able to follow Max Verstappen for a lap. A new rule this year, DRS is activated after just one lap instead of after two. Makes a huge, huge difference where or at tracks where DRS is super powerful, like Saudi and like in Australia. In Japan, like, that's not going to matter as much because DRS is just, it's just not that powerful in Japan with only the one zone. Yeah, I think Japan only has one DRS zone. Or does it have two on the back straight? Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. We're not talking about Japan just yet. Anyway, Sainz able to follow Max Verstappen through until the third DRS zone on that track. There's so many DRS zones in Australia. It's four with two detection points. So the third zone right ahead of that high-speed chicane that everyone loves to watch the cars follow through. Passes him through there, like breezes past, and everyone wondering what's going on with Max Verstappen. That looked a little bit too easy for Sainz, but of course the fans are pumped for that. The first on-track pass we've seen past Max Verstappen in a while. So from there, Sainz basically just controls the gap and cruises to victory. Of course, that is not the full story. We will get to Red Bull later, as I said. But Max was not in this race from lap four. Had to retire with brake issues. His first retirement since Australia 2022. And I've been saying for a while, the drivers, their eyes must just completely light up when they know Max Verstappen has a problem or isn't in the race. I think the last time I could think of that was also in 2022. Silverstone, of course, Max wasn't really in the fight in Singapore, so that also, I guess, counts. But a real issue with his car, I want to say, was Silverstone 2022. It must have just been a completely different feeling in the cockpit for some of those drivers. However, the race was never really that on, was it? Or at least it didn't feel that way when I was watching it. Sainz just was brilliant, simply too fast for his teammate Checo or the chasing McLarens. Leclerc even admitted after the race that he just couldn't get the tires working right, and when he finally did on the second stint, it was just too late. Sainz had pulled too much of a gap, and I mean Charles was still able to complete the 1-2 for the Scuderia, so that's great for them. It was a dream race, really, and now they're right in the fight for both titles with Leclerc and Sainz not that far off Verstappen in the Drivers' Championship. Perez is actually right behind Verstappen too. He kind of lost a lot of points from this race. And they're also right in the fight when in the constructors with Red Bull. I think it's only like a 4-point difference. Maybe it's a bit more, but anyway, they're right there. So I'm sure Red Bull and Max will jump out at the next few races. Japan's going to be super strong for them. We all know how they responded after a tough race in Singapore and Japan. They dominated that Grand Prix. Max was so good. I'm sure it'll be the same story this year. So China. Maybe it's a whole new track. Well, not brand new, but new for these cars. So we have no idea how they're going to run there. Miami always seems to be a bit of a Red Bull stronghold as well. So the next few events, it's looking like Red Bull is probably going to dominate them. But if Ferrari can somewhat keep it close and then maybe make a big step for the European leg of the season, then who knows? Maybe this year is going to be more interesting than we thought. I doubt it, but just forgive me for being a little optimistic and just thinking of the possibilities that we could have. Okay, complete props to Sainz. I'm actually going to talk more about Sainz a little bit later as well. Let's talk about Red Bull though, then, shall we? I've been teasing it a little bit. I think this was finally going to be the first drama-free weekend for Red Bull until the unfortunate retirement, of course, because that is always very dramatic when Max Verstappen doesn't finish a race. Red Bull came in as the favorites, undoubtedly. Max still put it on pole with a brilliant, brilliant lap. It didn't look for sure at all going into qualifying. In fact, it probably looks like Leclerc may have been the favorite for pole, but Max was incredible. Checo was also there. Should have been P3 on the grid, but a penalty dropped him down to sixth. And it's hard to say if that really cost him, because, I mean, Max did his job. He got out of turn one clean. And then, of course, he had that right rear brake problem. Max said it just stuck on. So the brake pad was just up against the caliper. I think I'm getting it right. And it was just completely melting the rear corner after a few laps. And after that, it was pretty much game over. So Max's race ends super soon. And then all the focus turns to Checo and seeing what he was able to do. He's had two pretty solid weekends so far. That's what everyone said. Bahrain, he did what he needed to do. And then I think in Saudi, he was actually genuinely pretty decent. I think he had to make up ground from P6, as I said, but it's hard to say if that cost him, as I was saying, because he didn't really make up the places that you would have expected. I mean, he couldn't even catch the McLarens, who were struggling to keep up with Leclerc. I mean, not really struggling. They were probably on the pace of Leclerc, but Leclerc was a whole nother level behind Sainz. So Checo was not really in the fight for the race win from pretty early on, I would say. And then it looked worse as the race kind of went on. It kind of fell away from him, I would say. And one more note, I guess, on the Max situation that I forgot to mention was, I'm not going to complain, but it kind of would have been nice almost to see if Sainz could have brought the fight to Verstappen. Like, of all the times, it would have just been fantastic for Max to just retire from the lead. This was actually not one of them, unfortunately for us race fans. I feel like there's been so many great fights for P2 behind Max, and this actually wasn't one of them. And there's so few times that we've seen a driver actually be able to fight with Verstappen out front, and this could have been one of those times. So, yeah, actually disappointing timing for the Max retirement, but as I said, not going to complain. It's great to see another driver up on the top step. It is always so fantastic to hear the Italian anthem played on when a Ferrari driver's on the top step. It's awesome. So it actually kind of gave me chills a little bit. So as I said, unfortunate timing for Perez as well to have his poor race, because I feel like if he could have had, you know, his performance in Saudi here and then maybe scrapped with Sainz, even if he ended up P2, his stock would have been much higher than it is, you know, having a good race in Saudi, finishing P2, and then having a poor race in Melbourne when Max retires and then he finishes like kind of in a lowly P5. If it was the other way around, I think we'd be talking of Checo differently. But of course, now all these questions are going to resurface about whether Red Bull needs to look to upgrade at their second seat, because Ferrari might be coming. That is going to be the storyline after this race. So we have to see if Checo can avoid that slump that he seems to always find himself in mid-season. So he's got to respond in Japan, and Japan was a nightmare for him last year. I'll have more on that in the preview, of course. Don't want to get too ahead of myself. So let's go to McLaren. Their first podium of 2024, Lando P3, Piastri P4, a great result. It would have been fantastic to see Oscar take the podium at his home Grand Prix, but Lando, he drove a great race to deny his teammate, get himself up there. I must say, though, their pace was just, it was just okay, wasn't it? Or, I mean, it was good, but I actually expected a little bit more at this track. It was hard to compare because we didn't know how good they were going to go. They didn't have their upgrade at this track last year, so it was a little bit new waters for them. But still, I thought that this was going to be a really good circuit layout for them. Sainz was just too good, I think. He was effortlessly stretching the gap on Lando after Max retired. That was kind of the fight, is you saw Sainz, you know, Lando was close up to Sainz behind Max when he retired, and then the gap just kept getting bigger, and it was like, okay, really early on you were like, this isn't going to be a race. Let's see what Leclerc can do, because you would have assumed that he would have been on the pace of Sainz, but he really wasn't. So that's why I said the race never really felt that on. Also, a bit of a questionable strategy costing Lando Norris probably the P2, was allowing Leclerc to undercut him, and then also allowing Oscar to undercut Lando as well. Oscar didn't put up a fight or anything, so I don't think it really cost Lando's race, but allowing Leclerc to undercut, I think it was really their pace that kind of forced them to react to a Mercedes instead of reacting to a Ferrari. I think that's kind of what undid them. But either way, P3 and P4, they're not going to complain with that. I will say, I don't have that much to say on McLaren. If this track was suited to them, though, Japan is going to be the ideal venue for this car. So look out for them there. Now, Mercedes, do not look out for them. In fact, you might want to cover your eyes. It's ugly right now. My team is just a joke. I can't stress it enough. I didn't write anything down. I was just gonna basically rant about how I'm feeling about this team. I've lost all faith, and I kind of already said that last weekend. But this weekend is just another reminder of they're so lost. Like, this was a great circuit for them last year, and of course they overhauled the car, so they should have new characteristics, right? But the McLaren, the Ferrari, and the Red Bull are just so, they were miles better. And in fact, they're kind of battling with Aston Martins here. Russell obviously having the incident, struggling to pass Alonso in the last stint there. You know, now they have reliability issues with Hamilton. Hamilton is having a shocking start to the season. I've heard that he is doing a little bit more of that experimentation with setup as he was in 2022. I doubt it's to the extent of what he was doing in 2022. I really just feel like Hamilton's not checked out, but is so lost himself with this car, because it must trickle down at some point, right? He sees that the team is completely lost, and he's like, how am I supposed to feel confident if you can't even be confident about the car be confident about the car you're making? So he's feeling different stuff every time. He was saying, last week we were struggling in the high speed, great in the low speed. This weekend was the complete opposite. He said they were actually decent in the high speed, and then all of a sudden the low speed, they were terrible. Kind of the last few corners of the lap. Like, the team has no, I don't know how they have a direction when it's so flip-floppy from race to race, and not even from race to race, from session to session. Hamilton had some really good practice sessions, and then they show up in quali and he can't get out of Q2. It's a complete diva mystery, just nonsense with this team. And of course, Russell, he looks to be more on top of the car, And this is going to sound like a slight to Russell, and I know it's going to sound also rich coming from a Hamilton fan. Russell, I think, is one of the most underrated qualifiers on the grid. I know when I had Tim Horaney on a couple of years, he said Russell is the best qualifier, better than Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. I believe Russell is a great qualifier and maybe even better than Lewis Hamilton. But I will say it does seem like Russell has a bit of like a blind confidence with the car. And I know that's probably so unwarranted to say that. But for me, I feel like when he's kind of hustling a bad car, he's a little bit less worried about getting a snap or making a mistake than Hamilton is. And maybe that's a strength of Russell. I don't even know. That's just kind of my feeling. Because the other thing I'll say about Russell is after the qualifying session, he got P7. It was way off the pace. That is not a good result for Mercedes. And his reaction was actually kind of strange. He was asked about whether he was struggling with the same confidence issues as Lewis was. And he was like, no, everything's good on my side of the garage. Not sure what's going on over there. And it was kind of like, I don't know if that was the right message to send out. Mercedes had just a shocking session, regardless of the fact that you beat your teammate. You were still a second or whatever it was off the pace. You were nowhere close to pole position. You shouldn't be happy just with beating your teammate. You know, I get that that's your only benchmark, but God, man, like the car was a dog. And just because you beat Lewis doesn't mean that it was a great qualifying session. And, you know, you have no issues and you're super confident and whatever, because it kind of rears its ugly head in the race, doesn't it? Of course, Lewis is out of it, so no benchmark against him there. But then he has that issue with Alonso, and I guess I can get into it now. Russell really chasing Alonso in the last lap. He actually could have maybe passed him, Alonso, with a little bit of a cheeky, not a brake test, but erratic driving, I guess is what it was called, because Alonso was given a post-race 20-second penalty for it. He broke like 100 meters earlier than he had been in the earlier laps. You could see on George's onboard, he closes up to Alonso super quickly and then kind of loses the car, and a little bit of dirty air, of course, but also probably caught off guard by the fact that he was driving into Alonso's gearbox almost and then crashed the car. And I think it's definitely more so because of Alonso's erratic driving that caused the crash. But I think also when George is in that hustle mode, I feel like sometimes he's going to push the car to the limit closer to over the limit than Lewis will in situations like that. I don't know if that's just age or experience or what it is, but it does sort of feel that way. Like Russell clearly got frustrated in Singapore, and that's what caused him to lose concentration and run into the side of the wall, and which crashed him out in the last lap of that race as well. So it just seems like a little bit of different personality traits, and I think it maybe actually helps Russell in qualifying, but then also it makes him a little bit more crash prone as well. So it's a give and take. Anyway, I'm completely off on a tangent here. Mercedes sucks. I have no confidence that they're going to be able to turn this around. Of course, I think they absolutely, there's still potential for it. I mean, if they can learn what the hell they have with this package right now, maybe they can upgrade it and maybe they will be, great at some tracks this year. But as of right now, they have a lot of work to do if they want to even challenge with McLaren and Ferrari, because yeah, they're in a fight with Aston right now for fourth. It's pretty ugly, and I bet Mercedes, or I should say, I bet Lewis, looking at the Ferrari 1-2 right now, wishes he was already driving for that team. All right, and then the last team here, I'm going to go with Williams. I know it was actually RB and Haas that scored the points, but a really big storyline out of Williams this weekend where Albon crashes out in FP1. I mean, what a situation Williams found themselves in this weekend, really, and it all stemmed from over the winter. Williams had a nightmare winter where they were completely changing all their processes. I mean, they used to build a car from an Excel spreadsheet. That is just absurd. So Vowles, the team principal, James Vowles, I should say, came in. It was like, we got to change some processes here. This is not going to fly. So over the winter, while they're in the middle of changing how they build the car, they're also still trying to build the car. And yeah, it was a nightmare. They were almost late to winter testing. They still did not have a spare chassis. They didn't have it for Bahrain or Saudi too. And then, of course, they finally get a crash with their lead driver in FP1. So really, I love Albon, but that's a shocking crash, really, especially he knows the situation. So he to crash that badly in an FP1, he's probably not feeling great about himself there. And the decision, I guess I should get to it, is that Vowel said, all right, Logan, unfortunately, we're going to give your chassis to Albon. You're not going to race this weekend, even though it was Albon who crashed his car. Now he's going to take yours. That must be an all-time low feeling for a driver. I mean, you would almost feel like, why am I here? Why am I even a part of this team? Like, it almost feel like Albon is the one car. He was effectively this weekend. They were a one car team and he was their driver. But that's kind of how Logan must feel. It's like, am I even really a part of this team? Do they believe me in me at all? And really the decision shows that they don't, because if they did, they would have just let Logan drive and Alex would have faced the harsh reality of where the team is and what that situation is. So what I've done it, it's hard to say because Albon definitely does give them the best chance to score points. Yeah, that's proven by the past year in the first two races that Albon still has a sizable advantage over Logan Sargeant. And this was a race that they went well at last year. The race did turn out to have opportunities to score points as Williams were anticipating. Unfortunately, Albon finished P11. If he crashed, though, could you imagine if Albon also crashed Logan Sargeant's chassis? That would have been just the worst outcome ever. Like, Williams would have looked like absolute fools. Albon would have felt terrible. Logan Sargeant would have been furious. That would have been an absolute nightmare. So at least Albon brought it home safely, but unfortunately it did not pan out. But in a way, it kind of did, because he was one position away from points. They would have been completely vindicated if he did. It showed that they made the right decision, because ultimately Logan probably would have been a few positions back, nowhere near the points. So they went for it. It didn't quite work out, but I think it also showed that it would have worked out if a few other things went their way during the race. Like maybe the VSC that really helped Hülkenberg, and then Albon gets 1 point, right? So it's tough. I've not answered the question of would I have done it? That was a challenge. It's hard. I feel like probably not, just because I'm not a leader like that. Like, you know, Vowels is a true leader who can make those tough decisions. I would have more of a problem with that, just because I'm not that natural born leader that James Vowels clearly is. So I guess that's my cop out answer. So no, I probably wouldn't have done it. It could have bad implications for Logan for the rest of the year as well. A lot of people are anticipating that he's going to be replaced anyway, but by Australia, they already know that. It's kind of strange, right? But the 2025 silly season is going to be crazy, so they should have lots of opportunity, especially if they know Kimi Antonelli is definitely coming into the fold. Then it's like, whatever, we need these points, right? So anyway, let's get into the results of the Grand Prix. Carlos Sainz, P1, still the only non-Red Bull driver to win a Grand Prix in the past 2 years. He was followed home by Charles Leclerc to make it a Ferrari 1-2. Lando Norris rounded out the podium as Oscar Piastri settles for P4 at his home race. P5 was Sergio Perez, not as competitive as he would have hoped, I imagine. P6, Lance Stroll, a surprisingly good result, but of course, he benefited a couple positions late after that Russell and Alonso incident. Yuki Tsunoda also benefiting, a brilliant P7 for him. Just amazing for a bottom five team. That could be the best result a bottom five team scores all year. I'm hopeful that's going to shut Helmut Marko up about his race pace, because he's been complaining about Yuki and Daniel. P8, Alonso, of course, dropping him two positions after the post-race penalty. Then it was Haas with double points. Hulk P9, K-Mag P10, their first double points since Austria 2022. Drivers' standings, Verstappen still on top, but only by 4 points to Leclerc. So it's 51 for Verstappen, 47 Leclerc, 46 Perez. So they're all really close after three races, even though it feels like there is not a title fight on the line at all. It's kind of funny. Sainz, had he not missed Saudi Arabia, he could be the championship leader right now. It's actually pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, that is just absurd, isn't it? that Sainz could be the championship leader after three rounds had he not had appendicitis. Piastri in P5, actually still 1 point ahead of Lando Norris. So, of course, Norris is in P6. Then Russell a little further back, 18 points for him. Alonso on 16 points. Stroll ahead of Hamilton. That is my nightmare. Stroll's on 9 points. Hamilton only on 8. He's in P10. And then still just behind Hamilton is Ollie Bearman with 6. Tsunoda, of course, did pass him, though, just on countback. They both have 6 points. But Tsunoda 11, Bearman 12. Looking at the constructors, Red Bull is on 97 points. Ferrari 93. So it was a 4-point difference. That is very close. McLaren 55 points for them, so they're still a ways back. Mercedes 26 points, Aston Martin 25, so they're really close for P4 right now. And then the bottom five just scrapping away for any points they can get. RB's on 6, Haas is on 4, the rest still on 0. Now let's get into the prize, demise, and surprise. Okay, so the prize has to go to Carlos Sainz. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Who had a better weekend than Carlos Sainz here? To do that with appendicitis is going to put him on the radar for any seat, I think, in Formula One. I've heard, strangely, Mercedes isn't really considering Carlos Sainz. However, Christian Horner did comment that they might have to look elsewhere outside of the Red Bull family for a driver. In fact, an employed driver just won. Like, that was kind of his comment, like, acknowledging that Red Bull sees what Sainz is doing and would potentially be interested at the end of the year. So yeah, a win like this, and if he can continue to perform sort of on the level of Leclerc, he is going to be the most sought after driver on the market, probably. So that makes it interesting if, like, I don't know, say Aston Martin would rather sign up Sainz than Alonso. Then Alonso becomes someone in looking for a seat. Maybe he retires. I don't know. Some crazy stuff could happen, and the more Carlos Sainz performs, the more likely he, like, things could just get crazy silly season-wise. So the prize for Sainz isn't actually his performance. It's the fact that I think he just made him basically the top prospect for any seat. There's a word for it. I can't think of it, but anyway, his performance was so good, I'm at a loss for words. We'll say that. Demise, Mercedes, back-to-back weekends. I usually try not to do back-to-back, but I mean, how are they not the demise right now? They're absolutely in the dumps. A horrible, horrible double DNF. They're so lost right now. Nothing could be going more wrong than it is right now for Mercedes, so they absolutely get the demise, but an honorable mention, they have to be shouted out as well. I didn't break this team down in the post-race, but Sauber with the pit stops, they just cost themselves points probably with Bottas. They cannot do a pit stop right now. I mean, the fundamental things, and especially for Sauber, if they want to attract a Carlos Sainz to come over there, you got to be able to make a pit stop, or else no driver is going to want to come to your team, because you can't win a race if you can't do a pit stop. That is just so strangely, fundamentally messed up that they can't do that. A Formula One team can't make a pit stop. It's crazy. They worked on the issues with their something to do with the wheel nut. I don't even know. I'm not very tech savvy. I'm sure there are other podcasts or other ways you could find out if you really want to know the technical details of what's going on there and why they can't fix their pit stop issues. But it's not like, you know, they're idiots. They just are running into a technical issue with their pit stop that you don't really see anywhere else. But yeah, it's crazy. And they are not going to score points until they sort that out. It's absurd. The surprise, I would say Red Bull struggling. I thought this would be a slam dunk, you know, great performance from them. I'm not surprised that once we got to a little bit more of a traditional circuit, although this is technically a hybrid street circuit, that Perez struggled. He struggled here last year as well. That's not surprising, but the fact that Max Verstappen had scrappy practices and it didn't look like it was for sure that he was going to qualify in pole, and then that Sainz actually could have challenged him in the race, all of those details is very surprising. I thought this would be an easy Red Bull win. I actually thought that last week or last race in Saudi would have been a closer race, but I guess not. So yeah, that surprised me. Now let's end off with Brad's bets. I'm changing the format. I'm always just going to review the picks that I made after the race weekend. I feel like it just makes more sense and people can remember. So I'll get into what my picks are for the Japanese Grand Prix next weekend still, but then I won't review the picks I had for Australia. We're going to do it this way now. So this week I had Tsunoda scoring points for plus 175. You are welcome. That cashed. Minus 25 for Max fastest in FP1. That did not happen. He was P2 in all practice sessions. Super annoying. And some of them he was also very, very close to P1. So I'm sorry that he was not fastest in FP1. Piastri, top six though. That cashed minus 130. And then Leclerc, podium minus 160. Also cash money for you. So 3 for 4 on my main picks. My long shot did not hit though. And that was a Lando Norris pole position. He was nowhere close. In qualifying, McLaren was really struggling with just 4 DRS zones, and their DRS is so bad. I should have actually saw that coming. I forgot about that. So yeah, they lost so much time in the DRS zones just because of how poorly their car works with DRS. But then you get to the race, you're not using DRS every single lap, and they were much more competitive. So that's kind of what happened there. Anyway, it was a long shot, so you know. You shouldn't have been going too hard on it anyway. That is going to wrap it up though, guys. I don't want to make the podcast too long anymore with my new job. I have to go to work in like an hour here. So yeah, that is going to do it for episode 91 of Brake Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer, and I will be back next Monday to preview the Japanese Grand Prix. Goodbye.